To hear even more about both this topic and other issues not being covered nearly enough by the mainstream media, you're going to want to tune in every morning to our full hour-long show. That's at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, available on the TYT Network channel on YouTube TV. Welcome back, everyone, to another Friday on the Damage Report. We are almost to the weekend, and yet at the same time, we still have a lot to get to. So much news. Some, you know, having to do with the ongoing legal troubles of Donald Trump and literally everyone he's ever had any dealings with whatsoever. But also an update on John McCain. Later on in the show, we're going to be joined by a congressional candidate who's rolling out a single-payer healthcare plan. She's running in Massachusetts 3rd District. And this is Barbara LaTallien coming back on the Damage Report. Her primary is coming up very soon, actually. But there's so much else as well. An awesome update on Duncan Hunter, the San Diego area congressman, the Republican, who is he and his wife are facing 60 charges of misusing campaign finance. He was interviewed by Fox, and the question of his wife came up, and you are going to love what he had to say about that. Also, a bill on election security. How did it get killed? We're going to talk about that. Joining me today in studio, Francesca Fiorentini is back in the studio.
Hey.
Good to be here.
How are you?
I'm good.
Whoo, you're still here after this week.
Yeah, we all are. Well, look,
it's giving up.
It's Friday. We're normally, we try to lighten things up a little bit. And we do actually have, at the very end of the show, we have some good news for you. So stick around for that. But you haven't been around the studio this week.
No, I feel like the whole week's been good news.
You've been traveling you've been working on a story about democratic socialism.
Yes.
So how did you greet all this legal news that's been coming up?
With just like a lot of like toasting to my new 50 Cent champagne that I bought of the rapper 50 Cent. I went out.
Do you really?
Champagne. Yeah, he's got a new champagne. So I was like, listen. I love Fitty, and I have to support him. He's struggling, so no. Yeah, I mean, it's been insane, and it's been great, and every single thing that we knew was going to happen is happening. And, you know, whatever you think of Mueller, and I think he's got a sordid history, but he's actually doing his damn job, and he's he's being pretty meticulous. And the fact that the discussions with Cohen and the deal wasn't even, I mean, he wasn't even debriefed, I guess. I'm not saying this properly, but until, like, a few weeks ago is insane. We thought he had spilled everything months ago when his offices and home were raided, and no. And so it's you again. This is the ultimate dumb Watergate, and they are so in over their heads. Mm-hmm. And the cheese is so alone, riding on a little rat named Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, poor Giuliani.
Really?
Poor Giuliani. You know, it's too bad considering you mentioned dumb Watergate. So John Oliver has his stupid Watergate.
Yes.
But I think he's off this week. This would have been a good week for him.
That's what I meant. I meant stupid Watergate. But anyway, you can't. It's not plagiarism.
No, we'll copyright dumb Watergate. Yes, and we actually have some other updates on some of those figures that were alluded to by Francesca. Before we get into our main stories for the day, though, I did want to mention an interaction that Frank Thorpe V, who is a reporter for, I believe, NBC News, had with Senator Bob Corker. And this has to do with Donald Trump and his South Africa white genocide farmers thing that he's been pushing, that he saw on Tucker Carlson, which is always a good thing for the president to take and turn into policy for the US. So Corker said that Trump's South Africa tweet was, quote, a base stimulator. And Frank asked him, what do you mean? What is his base that would be stimulated? And Corker said, well, there are portions of those who support the president that are, I'm sure that generates excitement. I mean, it's, you know what I'm saying. Well, he's not wrong there. We do know what he's saying. And
oh,
I just love, no, look, obviously Corker is one of the senators who is most willing to at least verbally go against the president. But that is just an, great, the admission that, yes, we know why he's doing this. It has nothing to do with South Africa. It has nothing to do with farming. It has to do with white genocide.
Right. White supremacy in 2018 is really just a, you know what I'm saying? A little,
yeah.
Wink, neo-Nazi little thing. Yeah, I'm just glad he's taking up the plight of Africa finally, thinking about African nations and doing something about it. It's just so bad.
Yeah, and look, and by the way, if you're listening to this and you haven't really been following this story, or your only exposure to it was from Donald Trump's tweet, or maybe you saw it on Tucker Carlson, I have a hard time believing there's a lot of overlap in viewership between his program and mine, but perhaps that's true. Do you not think that it's at least a little bit odd that all of a sudden Tucker Carlson and Alex Jones are talking about the story, and they say epidemic of killings, and they don't add on at 20-year lows. Isn't that a little bit weird, a little bit suspicious that they would leave that out, that the trend has actually been going down for literally decades, but now it's popping up on their radar? Is that a little bit weird?
White fear is real. Here's the thing. When Trump goes down in flames like the Hindenburg, I want white people who are still afraid to remember they can still hold on to their backwards ass beliefs in white genocide, and they don't have to attach it to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. You'll find a new candidate. You'll find some other guy to dog whistle to you, or woman. And I just want like, you know, white supremacists in the future, and just sort of like white fearful white people to realize that like this isn't their only candidate out there. Mm-hmm. Just like keep the faith. You know, there'll be other people to sort of use you as pawns.
Yeah. You can count on that. Turning to a little bit sadder news, it came out early this morning that John McCain's family has announced that he is going to be stopping treatment for his terminal brain cancer, which traditionally is a prelude to the person obviously passing away. So look, as literally almost everyone will say, I disagree with him on almost every political issue whatsoever. Still very sad for his family. I lost my father to cancer, so I understand, you know, what like, you know, Meghan McCain must be going through and all of that. So obviously sad. And he's had a couple of moments where he did the right thing.
Absolutely.
A couple of moments.
This was the right thing. His healthcare vote.
The ACA thumbs down was good. His at least partial defense of Barack Obama during the campaign when an Islamophobic woman attacked him. He's had a couple of standout moments.
Remember that moment, everybody. Like 2018, if it feels like not, I mean, this is what, 2012, no, 2000 and, what am I thinking about? 2008. Right?
Yes.
This is not that long ago. A woman stands up and says, well, Obama is a Muslim and he hates America. And he rips the microphone out of her hand and says, no, no, no. And it just, you know, speaks to the kind of character, like, at least we're not going to stand for blatant racism and Islamophobia. I think he's still got some kick left into him, and he's going to go on The View, and I hope he hosts. I hope he sits in.
Is he going on The View?
I just hope he just chills on The View for the. I mean, it's so sad. F cancer. We all know. We've all lost people to cancer. F cancer. I would wear that shirt every day. F cancer. But McCain's still got a lot more in him. I think he's going to say something before he departs. And yeah, he's definitely made his mark on this country.
Okay. And I would. This is the sort of dark prediction that we shouldn't have to make. But we were talking about it before the show. If and when he does pass away, there will be a number of awful social media postings about him, obviously, and that's people's right. They can say whatever they want. But one of them almost certainly will come from the President of the United States, who there's at least a 40% chance that he will post something derogatory about John McCain immediately after finding out that he died. And that is the world we live in. Okay, we turn now to. What's that?
That's why I'm just like, man, if there was a God, he'd be struck down right in the middle of that tweet. This is Trump, of course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the bad die old.
They do. So turning to the Trump Organization, it was announced, I believe, either late last night or early this morning that the Manhattan DA's office is apparently considering pursuing criminal charges against the Trump Organization, moving beyond individuals to the financial, the structure, infrastructure of Donald Trump himself. Apparently, two senior company officials might also be charged. And all of this is in connection with Mr. Cohen and the hush money payments to the various women that have alleged to have had affairs with Donald Trump. Now, to be very clear, prosecutors have not yet made a decision whether to file any charges, but it is apparently being considered. And it certainly doesn't seem impossible considering all of the legal developments that have happened over the course of this week. What do you think? Is this moving from we got Cohen, Cohen says Trump did crimes, to this is looking really bad for the president, that they're going to be looking into the finances of his organization that we have every reason to believe didn't just commit financial crimes when it comes to these hush money payments, but God only knows how many different tax violations and all sorts of things like that.
I mean, listen, every mob boss is never actually caught on the biggest crimes that they committed. They're always caught on tax fraud. We know this. And mm-hmm. this family is no different. Don Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump were about to have charges pressed against them for fraud in association with the Trump Organization itself. I don't even think the Trump Organization is a 501c3 anymore. I think it lost its status maybe about a year ago, I believe. And I mean, they they funneled money directly into paying off people that Trump was being sued by.
Yeah.
And they just paid him off. It's like, I never paid off anybody. Yeah, you did, dude. You just did it through your charitable organization.
Yeah.
And now you've lost that title. So yeah, I think there's more to come. The sweater is just unraveling. The emperor has an unraveling sweater.
I don't want that image. But you mentioned that, you know, the way that mobsters go down. I saw this morning, Dana Loesch said that they're trying to Al Capone Donald Trump. They couldn't get him for murder, so they're trying to take him down for tax fraud, which I love because in Dana Loesch's chosen metaphor, Donald Trump is a murderer.
Yes.
And should be allowed to walk free. Thank you, Dana Loesch.
I don't know what world we're in anymore.
Yeah, it's wild times. But we do have to take our first break. When we come back, what would these charges against the Trump Organization actually look like? And who else has been granted immunity? Major legal news for the president and his squad after this. Welcome back to the show. We're joined today in studio by Francesca Fiorentini. Always good to have you here.
Thanks.
And we're talking about the Trump Organization, its potential legal liability. If you're just tuning into the show, the concern that might generate a state-level investigation that is currently being mulled over by the state's DA's office, it has to do with the payments by Mr. Cohen for $130,000 to actress Stephanie Clifford because of the affair she said she had with Donald Trump. And apparently the new charges would center around whether the Trump Organization falsified the representation of the payment made to Daniels, which is an interesting question. And since I have a feeling they didn't say, we're paying off a former adult film actress to not talk about the affair she had with Donald Trump, they probably did falsify it, if I had to guess. I think.
Yeah.
And apparently New York's Attorney General Barbara Underwood is also moving forward with state level tax fraud charges against Michael Cohen, who has already pled guilty to similar federal charges. So at multiple levels, this is now continuing at the state level. But what's really interesting is stuff that's happened in the past 24 hours. So we had talked about David Pecker apparently being approached. This is on yesterday's show. David Pecker, you know, one of Trump's, I guess, highest level media allies, I suppose, owns National Enquirer, obviously was involved in these hush money payments, and produced amazing coverage for Donald Trump on the National Enquirer in the run-up to the election. I saw one of their November 2016 covers was just Hillary Clinton. It was corruption, racism, crimes. Everything on the page was about her.
It makes total sense, of course, that is his media ally. And that is actual fake news.
Yes.
Literal fake. I think I saw a headline.
The National Enquirer, yes.
That said, like, Hillary Clinton is the Loch Ness Monster.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they ran that.
Prove that she's not?
Yeah. Well, I've saw the flippers.
There you go. So he now has been granted immunity by the prosecutors looking at this case, that's obviously huge. Now, it also came out that the National Enquirer has a big safe where they keep information about these stories that they catch and don't release, I guess.
Like a DuckTales safe?
Exactly.
Like,
and it's filled with just information about Donald Trump, but also other celebrities. I don't think that will get out, but they do have the information. So if Donald Trump did know about these payments, if Cohen could prove it, which he probably could, David Pecker certainly could prove it. And that's now out there. But that's not even the biggest update to the story.
Oh my God.
Because as we've been saying, this has now moved beyond just the National Enquirer to the Trump Organization. Not to his allies, but to his organization. And as of this morning, Alan Weisselberg, longtime Trump Organization chief financial officer, has also been granted immunity in the probe into Cohen.
Wow.
And that goes potentially beyond just issues having to do with hush money payments into any number of different areas of tax fraud and, you know, God only knows what else. If you think that there has been money laundering, there is a very good chance that if someone was going to know about it, it would be Weisselberg.
I mean, the only way that you...
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The only way that you flip on Donald Trump or you take a plea deal or you get immunity is what? If there is so much mounting and irrefutable evidence against you and that no amount of money that Trump could offer you or any prestige, which ultimately you were the one who facilitated in the first place, could ever, I mean, unless you, again, unless you're like a Trump-based diehard freak, sorry, who's going to go to jail for decades for this, you know, lying sack of ham.
We can say that.
Sack of ham.
Yeah, we're allowed to. They haven't taken that away yet.
Like only, exactly. You know what I mean? Point. Like if only his actual base were representing him, they might be loyal is what I'm saying. Like they'll go to jail for him.
And what I want you to bear in mind, because the way that Donald Trump and his supporters in the media have been talking about plea deals and flipping, they talk about it as if you there's every incentive for you to just make up stuff. And if you're willing to make up stuff, then prosecutors are just like, good, you're lying to us, that's awesome. But that's not actually how it works. They don't offer plea deals unless the information that you're providing is both useful and also verifiable.
Right.
Because they have no interest in being the people who got a plea deal for someone and then it's later shown that they were lying about all that stuff. So they do verify it. And they're not gonna, you're not gonna take immunity unless, as Francesca is saying, they are presenting a very strong case to you. Because this guy works for Donald Trump. He has for a long time. These are his circles, which after this immunity deal, he might be permanently cast out of, which is only preferable to potentially spending time in jail.
Right. Who's going to go to jail for Trump? That's what I want to know.
I certainly would not. Now, all that said, this is, you know, these are huge developments. God only knows what's going to happen through the course of today and over the weekend. But at the same time, do not take for granted that anything is, she's dancing. You can't see, but she's dancing right now.
Oh, excuse me, no.
But we cannot take for granted that anything is going to happen. Nothing might happen. Or he might find out he committed various tax crimes and you know, campaign finance violations, but he stays in office for the next 6 years. That is entirely possible, so please mentally prepare yourself for that.
I'm not
I'm the down
going
the
to
show.
Do that.
Okay. Well, you might be emotionally wrecked at some point. Let's turn now to another topic, election security. So, there was a plan. This was the Secure Elections Act. It was a proposed bill that was working its way through Congress. And it was a relatively, I would say, controversial for the most part. Let's look at some of the things that were components of it. It wanted to give security clearances to the top level state election officers in each state so that they can follow real time threats to their voting systems rather than having to do sort of like time sensitive long processes to find out about each individual thing, because of course many of these are going to require security clearances. So relatively simple there. Also establish a channel amongst the DHS, other federal departments and states to share information on the security of each state's election. That's just an information sharing provision. That's not controversial either. And then requires state audits after any federal election and incentivizes efforts to get states to purchase electronic voting machines that actually retain a paper record of each ballot. Because although it seems insane, some states use machines that do not provide for a paper ballot and thus cannot actually provide any reasonable verification of what actually happened in an election.
We're trying to get to that point. So you don't get the
receipt. Exactly.
That little receipt that you sort of... Wait, that's how I do it. I don't have an electronic.
Well, that's how you do it, but also they have to have receipts so that they can be checked and all that.
Right.
And some don't actually provide that. So nothing that we just described there is controversial in any way. It's not huge. Also, by the way, has nothing specifically to do with Russia. That might be the impetus for it. But this simply means that any issue that happens in an election, whether domestic or foreign, we'd be more prepared against. Everyone should be able to agree on this, but some did not. Those people apparently are in the White House because Yahoo reports that the disapproval that led the White House to stop further consideration of the bill in the powerful Senate Rules and Administration Committee They didn't like it. They don't like it. And Senator Roy Blunt, the panel's chair, abruptly canceled the committee meeting that was required for the full Senate to actually vote on it, because of course it has to go through multiple levels. The White House has since said that the legislation would replicate existing authorities for the DHS and would violate the principles of federalism.
Ooh, that's such a throwback word.
I mean, they have a good point. I want secure elections, but I really care more about the principles of federalism.
And of course,
it's a dodge. This doesn't violate the principles of federalism. Federal government and state governments cooperate on any number of different issues, including election law right now. That is already ongoing. This would simply strengthen that cooperation.
Federalism, isn't that just like shorthand for like the executive power and just like, isn't that what?
Or the distribution of power across multiple levels. You have, you know, local, state, and federal power.
Right.
But they cooperate on all sorts of things already.
Absolutely. And what better thing to cooperate than this and ensuring safety of our elections? Also, it was proposed by a Republican. So it's weird to say that it was partisan, it was proposed by the Democrats. And then, of course, they're always steering this away from Russia and toward other countries. There's a lot of people, Iran. Mm-hmm. Iran. Anyway, I took a run today. I ran far and then I voted. I don't know. Like, they're really trying. Anything that like steers this away from Russia and towards Iran is also part and parcel of this whole thing. But it makes no sense. It's like, again, the idea of the current democracy we're working with is when you fight for voting rights is actually you're fighting for that's where we're at. Because ultimately, those in power, Republicans especially, even though they propose this bill, well, the White House doesn't want you to vote. Yay!
Yeah, or doesn't care if when you vote, it actually has the result that you think it should.
Right.
Obviously a problem. Could potentially be brought back up, but I would not count on it before the election. Okay, we're gonna take our second break. When we come back, Duncan Hunter, facing 60 charges, has an interesting defense, for himself at least, not necessarily for his wife in this matter. And then some truly horrendous racial profiling by the TSA coming up after this. Welcome back, everyone. We turn now to Duncan Hunter. So amongst all of Donald Trump and Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort's legal struggles this week, we also had on Tuesday Duncan Hunter, who is a sitting Republican California congressman, indicted for, between himself and his wife, 60 different charges of allegedly mishandling over $250,000 in campaign funds that he used to pay for shorts and Riverdance tickets and plane tickets for himself and plane tickets for his rabbit and a bunch of different stuff. So obviously a problem for him. Now, he and his wife have pled not guilty to these charges. And we were actually joined this week by Amar Campanajar, who's a Democrat running against Duncan Hunter this week. And so—
How's he doing?
He was very restrained.
Okay.
And respectful while saying that obviously the district deserves people who can both enforce the law and personally abide by the law. Now, Duncan Hunter and his wife, as I said, have pled not guilty to these charges. But it's interesting that now he has to sort of go in the media and explain why he's not resigning. He's lost his committee assignments. Paul Ryan took those away. But he's not resigning. So he went on Fox News, which should be a fairly easy interview, I suppose. Let's check in and see.
So are you saying that it's more her fault than your fault?
Well, I'm saying when I went to Iraq in 2003, the first time, I gave her power of attorney, and she handled my finances throughout my entire military career, and that continued on when I got into Congress, because I'm gone 5 days a week, I'm home for two. So, and she was also the campaign manager. So, whatever she did on that, that'll be looked at too, I'm sure. But I didn't do it.
Whatever she
did. Can you imagine? You know, the interview ends. You unclip your mic. You turn to your wife. How'd I do, honey? And she's just staring at you.
I'm sure that'll be looked at too. You know, I went to Iraq. I served my country, war hero. And you know,
if she was God knows what she was doing.
This
at the
is
time,
the same but. As just like, you know, a husband being like, you know, women. They just love to fold your socks. They put them wherever, don't they? They like to, you know, I have them in one place, and you know, who knows. Like $250,000 later. Whew.
To his credit, he did not literally say women be shopping.
But yeah, he might as well have.
That's gonna cause some domestic problems and should. And by the way, She apparently has committed many crimes. Like, she's facing many charges as well. In some of the direct quotes we have, she was encouraging him to spend money on non-campaign related things, bragging about the family vacations they went on using campaign funds. So
with the money.
With the money. So his
the wife, money and the bunny.
The money and the bunny, because they brought the bunny along. And
the bunny's name is Money. It's very confusing.
I've taken many flights where the tickets were far less expensive than that bunny took. That seems ridiculous that we're talking about a bunny, but they literally bought a ticket for a bunny using campaign finance funds that they were given. And so this is not good for him. Now, it is still an incredibly Republican district. He was handed this seat effectively by his father, who had served as a congressman for that area. But if you not only have been telling all of the people who donating to you, so these Republicans are donating to you, I don't care about you, I'm gonna spend that money on steaks and shorts. Now also, screw my wife, I don't care about her either. He also admitted in that interview to saying screw the Navy. Now he's a vet, I guess he has some immunity to saying screw the Navy. There's always those interbranch arguments.
Yeah, he was the most amenable to that.
He's running out of ground.
He is, but he was the most like, you know, we all talk S about the Navy-ish, about the Navy. My favorite part of that, and he is, because he knows he's in a Republican district, is that he's trying to use the Trump playbook, which if you've been following any other Republicans, doesn't look good on anyone but Trump. Yeah. So he was like, this is a political hit job. You know, this is all about, you know, me putting America first. I don't know. He just starts like—
It's
like,
the deep state.
It's the deep state. It's Democrats. It's all these things. And, you know, in his like overly tan, like maybe I just got back on holiday on taxpayer money. I don't know. You don't know. We don't know. Deep state. Like it just, it doesn't fly. Yeah. It's only Trump can do that.
The exact same thing that makes Trump so frustrating is that it is just Trump that gets away with it for the most part. It hasn't really worked for a lot of other people. Okay, that said, let's turn to some other some really unfortunate news. There was a report in the past week that had to do with the experiences of a number of people, primarily women, that had horrible experiences with the TSA, where they were stripped and the things that were done to them, extremely graphic. I believe Reuters has that if you want to go looking for it. But we have an individual who's experienced some horrific treatment at the hands of the TSA, and that is Zainab Merchant, who's a graduate student at Harvard University. The founder and editor of the website Zainab Writes was told by the TSA while trying to get through security in an airport that the TSA agent needed to take a deeper look after publicly patting down Merchant's groin area. So what happened? Well, Merchant said that she resisted at first, telling the two TSA officers that she was on her period and therefore wearing a menstrual pad. She insisted that any additional screening be done in public because she was worried about what would happen if they went into a private room and there were no other witnesses. TSA officials refused and said that if she did not comply, state troopers who were on standby would intervene and pressured into a private screening and forbidden to call her lawyer. That doesn't seem the slightest bit shady. She was led into a private room where they demanded that she pull down her pants and underwear and show them her pad. And that's the TSA.
Yay.
You have the state troopers waiting in the wings. You can't talk to your lawyer. Why? Why can't you talk to your lawyer? Hold me, I'm not going anywhere, I'm not doing anything, I can't talk to my lawyer. And so she acquiesced, she revealed her bloodied menstrual pad. And the thing is that this also fits into a pattern, not just in the wider sense in terms of how the TSA treats a lot of people, in particular people that are Muslim or they believe are Muslim, but she has been stopped by the TSA a huge number of times. And that is why the ACLU is trying to find out what this is about.
Right.
In one trip that she and her family took, she was stopped for this enhanced screening 10 times.
What?
10 times in one trip.
One trip, like there and back, round trip?
Yes.
How? I didn't know there were that many checkpoints to get to the Auntie Anne's pretzels.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What the hell?
So at one point, an explosives unit was called in to search her and her family. After having been screened by the TSA already, they brought in a team of dogs to search her and her bags. I don't know her. I don't know everything that she's done in her life, but she seems like a lovely person who speaks out on, you know, human rights and things like that.
She's a grad student at Harvard. Traveling with her family and gets humiliated like this over and over again.
Over.
Here's the thing. Definitely she's on a list, and I know we're going to talk about that. But honestly, at this point, the only thing left to do is just be like, oh, how do you know it's like really blood though? Maybe you should just like and take it off and just like, you know, make them like just smell. Just like rub in your face.
It hasn't yet gotten to that
rub
point.
Rub down your... I'll pat you down, TSA agent, with my bloody pad.
I would say that your relationship with the TSA is aggressive. Your strategy
True.
Towards
I'm not
is
on
quite
a list,
aggressive.
But if anyone wanted to look at my pad, I'd be like, absolutely. And you have to smell it, and you have to lick it, and you have to make sure that it's blood.
Look, to be fair, you are now on a list, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. I don't mind. See, I get pat down by the TSA all the time because I refuse to go through the, you know, like radiation detector mm-hmm. or like, you know, the cancer giver yeah. screener that was actually a friend of the Bush family who even created those body scanner things. Anyway, right. so I let him pat me down, and then I just pretend like I really like it.
Right. Maybe you've been taken off the list because they don't want to go through that.
Yeah.
But look, here's the thing. The ACLU is trying to figure out what the deal is with her and the government. Is she on a list? We know that there are multiple lists. There are many, many Americans that for seemingly no reason that we can figure out are put on these lists and thus have to go through these sorts of checks literally every time they pass the TSA. And imagine, she's a grad student. Like imagine if this was your experience every single time. People don't like having to like check their bag. Imagine having to go through this and the pain of your family having to watch this, the suspicion. Everyone around you automatically assumes that you've done something.
And there's no way to actually get on or off the list. They can't confirm or deny that you're on the list. They won't tell her whether she is on a list or not. They can't confirm or deny. And then, so if you don't know if you're on a list, how do you ever take steps to try to get off of it? She says she's applied for global entry. She's applied for, you know, pre-check, all the things. And they deny her application every time. It's insane.
Yeah, it's horrendous. This has been going on for a long time. Something actually needs to be done. Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, State Senator Barbara LaTallien joins the show once again. She is running for Congress in the 3rd District of Massachusetts, recently rolled out a single-payer healthcare plan in the days remaining in that primary. She joins the show after this to tell us about that plan. In not too much longer, we've got obviously more primary elections across the country and then the big midterms. And the consequences in those midterms are not just about sort of like rebuking the president. They're also about opportunities for what can be done if we had more representative, perhaps more progressive representatives. And joining the Damage Report now, State Senator Barbara LaTallien, who's a congressional candidate, joins us to talk about some of those opportunities. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing?
Good
Thank
to have you.
You
back.
Glad to be here.
So you recently put forward a plan, a single payer healthcare plan with a number of different components that you would like to see instituted if the Democrats retake the House, the Senate, and the White House as well. Could you tell us about that plan?
Sure. Well, you know, I have been supporting a single payer plan for a very long time, over a decade here in Massachusetts. I was one of the folks that cast a vote for universal healthcare here in Mass, which was known as Romney Care, which eventually became the ACA. I think that we need to move towards a universal single payer Medicare program, inclusive of a solitary prescription drug program, because I think that that would be a way to force bulk purchasing to drive down the cost of prescription drugs. I'm hearing from people as I'm knocking on doors that are paying $700 for one medication every 3 weeks for treatment of cancer, and it's just wrong. So I think we need to work towards, a Medicare for All program. And I've the only one that's got the experience of having created an insurance mandate up here in Massachusetts. I was able to get medical insurance coverage as a mandate for kids with autism because my own son, even though I paid insurance, wasn't able to be treated for autism. It cost a lot of money out of pocket for me. And I know many other families either were paying for that or they were going without. So there's a real equity issue there. I want to go down and join the Medicare for All caucus. I want to, support and co-sponsor the bill that's been put forward in the House, which is 676. I want to get on the Energy and Commerce Committee to play an active role in all of this. And I just really want to use my experience to, as an effective legislator that's been able to solve problems up here by passing a lot of legislation that's been groundbreaking, so that I can, be part of the solution instead of part of the problem. And I really want to block every Trump administration attempt to try to stymie individual states that are trying to work towards single payer as well.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about some interesting polling that I've seen in the past few days having to do with single payer. So there was a recent poll that showed obviously very high levels of support amongst Democrats. But even in that poll, 52% of Republicans supported some form of Medicare for All, which they did the analysis, and that is higher than the percentage of Democratic senators who currently support one form or another of single payer. So obviously, to get the Democrats to do this, part of it is having people like you elected into office for the first time. But once you're in there, you're in that caucus, how do you get more of those who have who've held office for some time to sign on? How do you move them closer to your position?
Well, I have pretty good powers of persuasion. I mean, I've had great luck up here working on elder issues and on disability issues, and I've been able to convince a number of my Republican colleagues. A lot of the votes that I've had for things like sweeping Alzheimer's legislation signed into law by our Republican governor 2 weeks ago were unanimous bipartisan votes. I think we need to get down to the core of what the problem is, begin to try to talk to people wherever we can begin the conversation with them around why healthcare is such an essential human right and human need, and just figure out where the conversation can start with these folks and build it from there. You know, access to healthcare should never be a partisan issue. It's a human issue. And I've always approached it that way. And I've always tried to work with my Republican colleagues and figure out where can I best approach them and how can I be most successful. For some, it's, you know, through the heart, by sharing examples and stories of people who have struggled and that need help from the government. For others, it's appealing to the sense of, you know, cost and, you know, making sense to rein down and rein in costs over the long run. I truly believe that every other industrialized country has made this happen. We can do the same. We've got a lot of money going out to overhead. You know, we have Mass General here in Boston, over 450 employees in there, just to make sure that the hospital and the doctors get reimbursed. That is money that is not going into care. It's just overhead. And, you know, I do believe that over time, we can save a ton of money, give people much better health outcomes if they're able to access preventively and get the medications and the care they need. It saves small problems turning into much larger problems that cost a lot more money in the long run.
So you're talking there about the cost, obviously. I've noticed we had a bit of a fiasco online over the past week where primarily, I think the most public-facing part of it was Jake Tapper, but the media was very interested in figuring out exactly how much some various forms of Medicare for All could cost. And I think a lot of people who are proponents of single payer feel like the portrayal of Medicare for All and the cost seemed pretty biased. What do you think about that, about the media's obvious suspicion to these sorts of plans and willingness to go along with what seems to me like the most doomsday scenarios in terms of how much it might cost?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a classic story of we're up against big money, entrenched interests. You know, who pays for ad dollars on TV? Who puts ads in the newspapers? You know, the healthcare industry and the health insurance industry has a lot to lose in this. And they are desperately trying to, you know, prevent or forestall major change that needs to happen. I'm seeing it up here in Massachusetts. We have an initiative on the ballot around staffing for nurses. Clearly, we need more nurses on every floor in hospitals. And yet, you know, you think we are asking for the world in the ads that are running up here by hospitals and health insurance agencies and such. So it's a classic case of the big moneyed interest trying to sort of hold on to their turf at all costs and really running counter to the human rights of every individual here in the United States to have access to health care.
Well, look, I want to thank you for putting forward a big plan like this. Obviously, you've been talking mostly about things for your district, but I also like that you're looking forward to what can be done if the Democrats do actually retake national power. So thank you, Barbara Letalien, running in the 3rd District in Congress. Thank you for rejoining the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, though, CNN contributor reveals so much, not just about himself, but also about CNN. And then we will be closing out this week of the Damage Report with some good news coming out of Georgia after this. Welcome back. back, everyone, to the little that remains of the Damage Report so far this week. We have a couple of things I want to get to, some interesting news and then some good news. So first, we turn to CNN, where Poppy Harlow was talking with Rob Astorino, Republican, and apparently new CNN contributor. But that's not all he is. Let's turn now to the video to learn a little bit more about him and his relationship with CNN and politics.
I just need to note that you work on the Trump 2020 Advisory Committee, and therefore you have signed an NDA that includes a non-disparagement clause.
Which?
So you can't really tell me then if, I mean, you really don't believe the president's own words? He's a good guy? About
Are you talking
Manafort?
About Paul Manafort?
Yeah.
No, look, I've known people. Have you ever met somebody that you knew well or knew or worked with
that
who did something,
a convicted
who
felon?
Did something
no.
wrong? Yeah, who
that,
did something
that
wrong?
That became a convicted felon? No, nor would I say after the fact that defrauded the American people, they're a good person.
They could be a good person who did a bad thing.
So look, the interesting thing about these contributors that they bring on, the one that I had the biggest issue with for a long time was Jeffrey Lord. Do you remember Jeffrey Lord?
Of course I remember Jeffrey Lord.
Yeah, so he was the guy that would repeatedly say that the Democrats are the party of the KKK. Because that was at one point true, and nothing changed since then. Nothing historically, no realignments or anything like that.
Nope.
And so they bring in these people knowing that they are not freed, either intellectually or in the case of Rob Astorino, literally legally free to give their actual opinion or to be honest. That's not financially how they survive.
She kind of messed up there because honestly the question is, so you worked on the campaign, Trump's, you're working on the Trump 2020 campaign, and you signed an NDA to not say disparaging remarks, so you actually can't be critical of the president.
Yeah.
Is that correct? That's it. Like,
you're saying she should have, yeah.
She should have just ended it there so that he could, instead of him being able to be like, well, you know, haven't you ever known anyone who made a mistake?
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful,
yeah, and
beautiful
I guess she should have really like put a pin on that point.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, okay, I'm glad that she acknowledged that. That's good from Poppy Harlow's point of view. I would love to know, I mean, how many of the other contributors that they have on. And I get
I would love to know how much you get paid.
Probably
to
so
be
much.
A contributor. I mean, this is what that's a total conflict of interest. They shouldn't be allowed to have, I mean, but every single one, like Lord, I mean, was he or was he not paid by the Trump campaign?
I'm not sure.
As a surrogate, right? Was it? And Kayleigh McEnany also was on
Kayleigh
CNN all the time. So like, I don't understand actually the politics and the parameters around being a CNN contributor. Mm-hmm. And are we actually just having to like dig the bottom of the barrel? These are the only people we can find who are going to support Trump's position? Trust me, there are many people, again, in line at Ralph's right now, reading the National Enquirer by Mr. Pecker, who believe everything they read. Loch Ness Monster has been found. He works at an In-N-Out Burger in Bakersfield.
That's true. I don't know how he even fits in there. Look, I'm going to try to be totally fair to CNN. And I guess you want to have people that represent different points of view, and you want access to people who are working on the campaign. That's fine. But you should understand what you get, and it should always be made as clear as it was right there. Like, look, if you brought on me to be a contributor, I'm going to come from a point of view. I'm going to come from a progressive point of view. But I don't have any literal legal obligation to say a particular thing. When you get Rob Astorino, why not just read whatever email goes around to the surrogates? Here are the talking points of the day. Why have a person deliver those?
Absolutely.
Why doesn't Poppy Harlow just read the talking points? Because he is legally obligated to say those and nothing else. I don't understand what the point of most of these shows are. When you have people who are not just coming from a point of view, but have no, they will never diverge from it. Jeffrey Lord did not say a single interesting thing in like 2 years of being a CNN contributor. But he got paid a lot of money, I guess, and maybe it provided some intellectual cover to them.
No, it's completely intellectually dishonest and pretty pathetic on CNN's part.
Yes, that is certainly the case. Look, I did say that we had some good news, so really fast, I just want to mention there had been a controversy this week that Randolph County in Georgia was considering shutting down, I believe it was 70% of the polling places. You should understand that this is an area of 7,000 people in the county, 61% African American, and obviously there's a long history of voter suppression against African Americans in this country, especially in the South. So the belief that this guy, Mike Malone, I think it was a consultant who was brought in, white guy, and said that they should shut all these down. That seems a little bit questionable. There was a lot of public pressure.
This is just like a racist consultant. Like, we need someone to just sort of, you know.
They couldn't have come up with that themselves in Georgia.
Discriminate up this place, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the good news, though, is that the Randolph County plan was actually rejected this morning on a 2-0 vote by the county's Board of Elections. The two members, a black woman and a white man, voted hastily and without comment. It was said to take less than 1 minute, and then they were done, and they were gone. And so they put out a statement, though, saying that the interest and concern shown has been overwhelming, and it's an encouraging reminder that protecting the right to vote remains a fundamental American principle. So thank you to everyone around the country that paid attention to this story and talked about it, because you might have been what determined this, thankfully, good news that we have today.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's been a good Friday.
Good Friday. We'll see what happens over the weekend. It could be insanity. Francesca, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, you can follow her on Twitter, by the way. Franifo. Yeah. Look her up.
Franny Fio.
Okay, thank you for watching all this week. We'll be back with God Only Knows What Developments, and we will see you Monday morning. To hear even more about both this topic and other issues not being covered nearly enough by the mainstream media, you're going to want to tune in every morning to our full hour-long show. That's at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, available on the TYT Network channel on YouTube TV.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.